You're listening to the Embroidery Podcast. I'm your host, Masako Newton. It's been a while since we recorded last, but now we are back. Thank you so much for sending us messages, even though we couldn't do any recordings for a while. One of the requests we received is to talk about how our careers started. And we talked a little bit about it before, but since we are celebrating Mark's 30-year career, we will go into a bit more depth about her own experiences. Let's get started. Hi everyone, it's Masako here. Welcome back to the Embroidery Podcast. As usual, I'm here with lovely Mark Dyer and Becky Hogg.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. So today's episode, which is the first episode of season three, we're going to be talking to Marg about her career in embroidery and particularly her sort of 30 years in the trade. So that's going to be really lovely.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that makes me sound really old though, doesn't it? 30 years.
But you started early.
That's it. Yeah, I was 10. Yeah.
How do you want to start?
I can start talking about, I guess, where I started. I did an apprenticeship at the Royal School of Needlework. So I applied. I saw an article in a magazine about the Royal School of Needlework. And at the time, I was just doing embroidery as a hobby. So after reading this magazine article, I couldn't believe that you could sort of work as an embroiderer. So not necessarily doing conservation, which I love, but just actually doing embroidery every day. So I applied and I did 3-year apprenticeship, and it's all in hand embroidery. So there were 2 years in the classroom and 1 year in the Royal School of Needlework studio, which at the time was called Workroom. And basically I stayed on. So after I finished my apprenticeship, I was offered a job there and became a teacher as well, which I still teach. So that's where it started for me 30 years ago.
Great.
Marg, when you first started on the apprenticeship, did all the techniques come quite easily to you, or were there some that you some that you took to more than others? Or?
Yeah, I think for me, I'd say gold work, metal work, I did not take to that at all. I think it was I quite like the freedom of like the colour of other stitches. So, for example, canvas shading, thread painting, applique, where there's a bit of freedom. I found metalwork, gold work, where you have to cut the pieces the exact size, your stitches have to be in, you know, the exact place. I found that I just wanted to stitch where I wanted, but you can't really do that. So I guess maybe things like that, the metalwork, I struggled with a bit, whereas I like the freedom. And the one thing I really wanted to learn, so I remember when I came for my interview and I saw an embroidered black work on the wall, and I'd never seen black work before. So for me, I saw it and I just thought, what, how do you even do that? That it just blew my mind. I couldn't work out how it was done. So I was really excited about learning about black work, and, you know, I still love it. And it, I just, that was the one thing that I just really couldn't work out how it was done. So, yeah, that.
Because I guess if the linen's so fine, you don't actually realise that the stitches are kind of counted, I guess.
Yeah, it just looked,
like lace or something.
Yeah, it looked like almost like a newspaper print.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, I couldn't understand how it, you know, you can't see the holes, you're right, so it was a bit of a distance away, and all I could see were these black patterns creating an amazing picture. So that I was really curious about, and also I was curious about the both sides alike technique. So that obviously as well, that sounds quite magical. It's like, how can it be the same on the other side? You know, how, you know, you don't look at the other side, so how do you know what's going on? So that also for me, I was really curious about learning it. I just, you know, you can't really work out how it works. Yeah, it's really strange. But I loved black work. Both sides alike, I didn't love it so much. But it does, you know, is a good discipline to know. I'm glad I've learned all the techniques that I've learned. So even though I didn't love some of them, I'm very happy I learned them all.
Yeah, it's the sort of discipline of those, like both sides alike, there's no room for error, is there?
Yes,
exactly. like with metal threads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Can you tell me how many hours a day were you stitching when you were training?
So probably started about 9, finished at 5, and obviously there was homework. So I lived in North London, so I used to get the train home and I would do homework. And so I'd stitch again, I'd stitch at the weekends. So it was quite a lot of embroidery, but it's all I wanted to do. So I was quite happy to spend all my time on embroidery. So I guess it depended on the technique, but pretty much most of the time I was stitching. But that was fine. That's what I wanted to do. So it was, yeah, it was okay.
So while you're training, either you're stitching or you're sleeping or eating.
Yeah, yes. I did manage a few nights out by Musco. So, but yes, it was good. Yeah, but that's what it was. I felt so honoured that I was on the Royal School of Needlework apprenticeship.
Yes.
So
yes.
I know that I was really lucky to get on there. And so for me, I was going to work 100% and do everything possible to get the best out of it, because I it's kind of almost like pinch me. I couldn't quite believe that I was there doing it in Hampton Court Palace, embroidery all day. And also I was surrounded by people that loved embroidery. So when you're at school, you know, I didn't know anyone that did embroidery. So none of my friends did it. So all of a sudden I had friends that did embroidery and they talked about embroidery and they were really into it. So for me, I loved it. I was with people that loved embroidery and still am, the fact I'm still there and still surrounded by people that do embroidery and love it. And yeah, so I still feel lucky.
I suppose, you know, not everybody got the offer after you finish your training.
No. I suppose, firstly, not everybody wants to. After the apprenticeship, some people wanted to study further. So they wanted to maybe do other kind of disciplines, perhaps. So go into fashion, go into more art-based careers. I wanted to basically practice what I'd, you know, I wanted to work in what I'd been doing for 3 years. So I love the restoration. I love the conservation and love doing new embroidery. So I guess for me, I wanted to stay in the studio because I just thought, wow, I can just carry on doing this and seeing amazing things that come in. So that is why I wanted to stay on. But some people, you know, also you needed to have good grades pretty much.
Yeah.
So you had to show that you were disciplined and that you got the grades. So if you didn't, you know, hit the mark, you probably weren't offered a job either.
So when you first started in the studio, do you remember what the first job was you had? Or
I think no.
No.
I'm sure you have so many projects that you remember.
Mm.
Maybe the first job you don't remember, but what is the memorable project you've done?
Oh, I have to. Okay, so yes, I have done some amazing projects. And I guess also seen some really beautiful things. So I remember that a group of us went up to a large house, shall we say, and in Oxfordshire, and we conserved some silk hangings on the that were attached to the wall, so they couldn't be removed. So we actually got to stay in this house, and that's great.
You had to do the job on site.
Yes, because the silk couldn't be removed because it was attached to the wall. So that was it was amazing. So I think there was four of us, and we had to get on scaffold and do it on the top of a scaffold. That was great fun. Also, I suppose going from one side to another recently, last year, I got to work on all the work that was done at the school for the coronation. So that's kind of a once in a lifetime project to be able to work on. So I'm, you know, from all kinds of things, that's kind of, I don't know, that's the pinnacle, I suppose, to being able to work on various items for the coronation. So that was wonderful. And also, I love the fact that we get really beautiful things into the studio and you get to see them close. So things that people have in their homes, and I just love being able to look closely at them and see how things are made, you know, some older things. So I really enjoy that side of it, I suppose. Just seeing all the variety of embroidery come in. Yeah, it's amazing.
Does that, do you think that inspire, all those things inspire you in your own work, your sort of own practice kind of thing?
I don't know, because I guess
you're surrounded by it all the time.
I guess, I suppose I get inspired when I go to exhibitions, and I get really inspired by something I've seen, and I'm like, oh, I love that colorway, or I love how they've done that. So maybe me getting out and about inspires my own work a bit more, because I just think I'm inspired quite a lot by, you know, nature and going to an exhibition, and all the time I'm inspired, and I have a million ideas and just don't get round to doing half of them. But at the time I'm really inspired. I'm like, oh wow, I've got to try that. And then it just goes on the end of the list, really.
Yeah.
I suppose a bit like all of us. We kind of like, oh, I've got to do some of that.
And I wanted to ask you one question, Mark. Well, not one, but did you have to wear green sweatshirts with the Royal School of Needlework on the back?
Yes.
That's amazing.
And you know what? I still have. So when we had to, when we stopped wearing those sweatshirts and T-shirts, I kept one. So I actually have a very rare T-shirt with Royal School of Needlework on it. And I do bring it out for special occasions. So I do wear it into the Royal School sometimes. And I love it because I don't know that anyone else has one, because I might have it all disposed of. And I thought, oh, no, I've got to keep mine.
It's been...
Can I ask, is that your ear only?
Pardon?
Was that your ear only?
No. So we had, I think before me, so at the Royal School, we had various uniforms, but it was only when we had to sort of help out in the classroom or, you know, that kind of thing. So probably be in the summertime when you had to help people get to the class, or you representing the school, you might go to an exhibition. And so we had T-shirts and sweatshirts with Royal School Needlework on. So it went on for quite a few years, and there were various different kinds of uniform. I'm sure if anyone's RSN trained at around the time, they'll remember many different uniforms. I know there were straw bonnets once.
Oh wow.
There were little kind of plaid scarves you had to wear around your neck. So we had the sweatshirts. Then we changed to white shirts and navy skirts, and then I think it just ended. So yeah, but I'd like to know if out there is another Royal School Needlework T-shirt or shirt, or have I got the only one?
Or other like older uniforms.
Or older uniforms, yeah.
Smocks or whatever.
Yeah, because I know back in the day, and I don't know the dates, that had to wear overalls. So I know there's pictures of the Royal School studio with workers in overalls, like kind of, you know, like white coat overalls. They both protect their clothes. So
you have to wear that?
Yeah.
Like a surgeon.
Yes. Like a surgeon. Yeah.
Gosh.
But also, I suppose it kept you, you know, if you're kind of working on something really old, it keeps it clean and it protects the item as well. So, you know, it's kind of two ways. But yeah, so the as was for identification, though. So people would know that we're staff and, you know, we can help them with finding the classroom and that kind of thing. So we have badges now. That does the trick.
Yeah, I'm okay with the badges.
I was going to ask Marg also, because obviously you worked for so many years at the Royal School of Needlework, but obviously you have, you do your own work as well. Like you've done a lot of books, haven't you? And jewellery, etc. And you're always working at home, I know, doing, got a lovely studio at home.
I suppose doing, writing my book was just a dream come true for me.
Well, can you tell us how it started? Did the publisher contact you?
Oh, yes. So I was contacted. I was recommended to the publisher by someone, and they contacted me, saw my work, and asked me to write my book. And I loved every minute of it. And I went well over my word count, and I could have just carried on. I'd still be going now.
So, I think you need to write a second
book. Well, yes. I just, because it's about thread painting, so it's about my favourite type of embroidery. And I know, as I've taught over the years, obviously I've been teaching the whole time, and I've given little tips to people about thread painting. So many people have said, oh, you should write that down, you should write a book, you should put all your little tips into a book. And I guess at the end of the day, that is really what I've done. But my 30 years or 25 at the time experience into that book, and hopefully people will approach thread painting and kind of feel that I'm maybe there with them when they're reading it. It's like, oh yeah, what do I have to do here, or what do I have to do there? So I think I've achieved that. People have said that they found it really helpful when they've sort of started thread painting. So I guess maybe I'm most proud of that, really.
Do we have any more questions for Marg?
Okay, Marg, you have so many followers on your social media platforms.
Yeah.
Do you think you need it to get some freelance jobs, you know? Does it help to have a big number of followers, or it really doesn't matter?
For me personally, no, it does not matter, and it makes no difference whatsoever to work for me. So to be honest, the place that I've got work from and I hardly had any followers was actually from Twitter, or X as it's called now. And so I've had people approach me on there with hardly any followers, and I don't know. So I've had magazines contact me on there, and also I have a blog, although I haven't written in it for ages, and it was having a blog that people also are able to contact me. And I would say Instagram and Facebook, no, that I have lots of followers, but to be honest, it's not it doesn't generate work. I suppose I'm able to promote my book on there, but in terms of getting work, so magazine, book, opportunities, that has come through my blog and Twitter. now known as X. So for me personally, it doesn't matter. And that might be different for other people. Also, for me on Instagram, I just put up, it's not curated, I'll put up whatever I'm working on. I don't kind of do colours. I don't have them all the same shape. It's just a snap of whatever I'm working on. So maybe if you had a certain aesthetic to your, you know, page, maybe you'd get more followers and work. But it, for me, that's not why I do it. I just put up whatever I'm working on.
Yeah. Could we ask how you see your career going in the next 30 years? In the next 30 years?
Yeah.
What do you foresee?
Right. In the next 30 years, maybe I will start using some of the threads and beads and fabric that I've bought in the past 30 years. So, and I'm really trying to do that now. So instead of saving, you know, you buy amazing bead, you think, I'm going to save that for best. And then you never use them. And I have so many for best threads, beads, beautiful fabric, and people are giving me really lovely things and I think, oh my god, that's so beautiful, I can't use it. Well, it's ridiculous. So over the next 30 years I will use some of these things, I think. And also, I guess when people know that you work with threads and beads, people are really kind and they say, you know, my relation or my neighbor died and would you like their sort of sewing box, or would you like, I found this in my, you know, parents' things, would you like it? And people have been really kind. And so I have got some really lovely things that people have given me. So they're kind of special because I know they're older and they were cherished and now I have them. And yeah, it's really nice. People are really kind, you know.
I've got to say, having worked same as you in the RSN studio, it's like a sort of Aladdin's cave, what do you call it? It's like being a kid in a sweet shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have that gorgeous like bead cupboard.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And all sorts of bits and bobs that have been collected over 100 and so years.
Yeah, I get 150 years.
150 years,
I guess that when the studio does conservation work or restoration, it means that we have a stock of things that are original, you know, Berlin beads from Berlin Woolwork.
Yeah.
So it's lovely that they're getting donated and then they get used in projects. And, you know, it gives them another life.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on the Embroidery Podcast Season 3. We hope you enjoyed today's episode.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We've really enjoyed being back together for the new season.
Thank you for listening, everybody. We're really happy to all be back recording. If you've got any questions or comments or ideas for topics, please get in touch with us on all our social medias. And we look forward to the next time.
Bye.
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 What did you think about today's episode? We would love your feedback. Please feel free to send us a message. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, happy stitching!